Good afternoon. Or if you're in later time zones, good evening. Just allowing yourself to settle in and find your seat. I'd like to talk a little bit more or build upon some of what Nikki and I have been talking about and the instructions and the little dharmat that Nikki gave last night. I'll begin by talking about this idea of becoming more sensitive to your experience. Maybe we could use different synonyms, maybe for sensitive, something like being attuned to or noticing or being aware of. Not so much about being more susceptible to being upset or thrown off balance. Sometimes people will say you're too sensitive, meaning that you are thrown off balance or affected by things coming your way. But more about being sensitive is kind of the opposite of having inertia or having a certain dullness. Sensitive is a way of maybe just inclining the mind, inclining the awareness towards what's happening. But sensitive implies maybe a little bit more open, spacious way in which we might experience phenomena. There's a number of different ways that we talk about meditation practice and the purpose of mindfulness practice, and the ways in which we think about the purpose or the goal or why we're doing this influences the way we practice in obvious and not so obvious ways. For example, and these are just examples that you'll see that there's not that one that's right or wrong, but that the idea is that the way the ideas that we have influence the way that we practice. For example, if we have the idea that the goal of practice, the reason why we're mindful, the reason why we meditate is to see clearly, it's all about seeing clearly, then we might have this idea that we have to create a magnifying glass that we can look through and see things clearly, which is perfectly fine. But this idea of creating a magnifying glass might bring a certain amount of straining, might bring a certain amount of tightening around and holding this glass and staring through it, or really trying to create and make this magnifying glass. As opposed to this idea of being sensitive, you still might see things more clearly. But the way that you approach the mindfulness or the subtle ways in which the perspective of practice is influenced. In the same way, if you have the idea that meditation practice is all about not having any thoughts, getting rid of thoughts, then there might be a way in which you practice is becoming disappointed or disheartened every time there are thoughts that arise. Or there might be a lot of comparing mind in the sense of I didn't have thoughts that one time 3 years ago, and now I'm doing all this thinking, or that person in the square over there doesn't look like they're having thoughts, and I'm having thoughts. What if the meditation practice is not so much about getting rid of thoughts, but becoming a sensitive, becoming aware with what's happening? That might bring a little bit more openness, a little bit more spaciousness. In the same way, we might think that mindfulness practice is just about getting blissed out, finding that happy place, and then doing everything we can to never leave it. Then our experiences are much about like batting away any experience that might be uncomfortable, pushing away, you know, whatever's uncomfortable, whether that's a physical experience or a mental experience. Instead of recognizing that, okay, there's a range of experiences that humans have, and can I be aware with them? Can I hold them? Can I be sensitive to what's happening in a way that's stable and steady, and maybe with a little bit of warm-heartedness? So these are just some of the ways, pointing out this relationship between some of our ideas, our perspectives, and the way that it might influence the way in which we practice, the way that, in ways that might not be obvious to us, how we approach the whole endeavor of meditation, the whole experience of meditation. So maybe it's worthwhile just to spend a minute now to reflect on this. In your view, what is your view about meditation? Is there a particular way in which you think that meditation should be, or its purpose should be, or some experience you should be having? And is that view showing up in a particular way in the manner in which you meditate that is maybe helpful and sometimes not helpful? Such a big part of meditation practice is, in fact, learning to be flexible, learning to be malleable, to have some plasticity in the way that we approach our experience, in the way that we interact with our experience, interpret our experience. I think all of us know this, that things are helpful until they're not. And so a big part of practice is to be able to pick up different tools and also then to put them down sometimes. And it's just through trial and error, through exploring, curiosity, playing, working, that we discover what are the different tools, how best to use them, when to pick them up, when to put them down. So when I'm talking about this idea of being sensitive, we've already talked about being sensitive to your bodily experience. There's a number of ways we can do this, as we mentioned. It can be either with kind of the global experience of having a body, the whole body. Or it could be a more specific tightness in the heart or chest area, furrowing of the brow. But we can bring this idea of sensitivity to the physicality, to the felt sense, in kind of a general way, as this, maybe it's this opposite of inertia, opposite of, well, I always sit this way. My body always feels that way. So maybe sensitivity is like, maybe it's a little bit less of a real deep probing. I got to figure this out. But more of the opposite of inertia, which is a little bit of a movement and maybe a flowing. In a relaxed, easy way that's supportive. Of course, we can also be sensitive to our emotions. For this retreat, because it's just a few days that we're together, it's just a few days when we're practicing, it can be helpful to simplify and allow our emotions to quiet down just for these few days. This isn't a way to live your whole life. This isn't a way to do all of your meditation practice. Maybe just for this little remaining time that we have of practicing this way, for this particular context, can we allow our emotional life to quiet down without being dismissive, without being brutal? Sometimes we're brutal to ourselves. Without being hard on ourselves. If we allow our emotions to quiet and simplify for this, the duration of this retreat, there's no danger that you won't find those emotions again, and or those emotions won't find you. It's not that we're pretending like they're not there. We have just set the intention just for this practice period to allow them to quiet and allow them to soften. Not pushing them away, not shutting them down. It's more of a sense of, yes, I see you. I'm not going to go there right now. I'm going to bring my attention back to the sensations of breathing, for example. As I said, a big part of meditation practice is becoming flexible. And so this is one way in which we can be flexible, is that is to acknowledge, of course, we have an emotional life. And of course, it's not appropriate to always be just letting them quiet, or, and it's not, just like it's not always appropriate to allow them to be really loud and running the show. So as best you can, in a way that's wise and makes sense for you, taking care of yourself, you can allow them to quiet. We can be sensitive to our mental experiences, if, as Nikki and I have been pointing to a little bit here, the perspectives we take, the attitudes we have, the general mood or quality of the mind. We can be sensitive to other people around us. Maybe noticing those people that perhaps we don't usually notice. The person in our neighborhood who is often walking their dog. The person who parks their car near your car. The person who, you know, works at a place that maybe you go to pick up your coffee or your groceries. Maybe now we notice them more with this COVID-19 era. But if you reflect on your life, there might be some individuals that you don't notice. So we can become sensitive to others around us. just that they're there, as well as we can become sensitive to what is going on for them, their experience, a little bit more of an attunement, a sense of how they're doing. Not that we know necessarily exactly what's going on. I think many of us have this experience. If you've been on a silent meditation retreat, you can often tell by the way people walk or sit, or the way they are in the dining hall. So those of us on this retreat, we're not sharing those spaces. But if you're living with somebody else and sharing space with them, you might be noticing a little bit more, having a little more sensitive to what's going on with them. Also important is to be sensitive to the amount of effort we're applying. This idea of being sensitive to our experience or gaining sensitivity, notice how that feels a little bit different than this idea of getting concentrated or getting focused. It might have the same direction, the same movement, but with a different flavor, a different quality of it. We might have a default mode of effort. We might have the usual way. I sit down in the usual way and I apply effort to the object in the usual way. Maybe being sensitive is just about noticing these types of things. What is the usual way or the default way when things are difficult? What's the default way that you have? And maybe the last thing that I'll say here regarding being sensitive is also something that with practice, we can be sensitive to beauty. There is beauty. There's non-beauty also. I'm not pretending that there isn't. But sometimes there might be a habit to be a little bit dismissive of things that are either aesthetically pleasing, that is, either it might be that the space you're practicing in has things on the walls or things on the tables. Or for me, I have a ficus plant right near me. It's very nice. It makes me feel very nice to have this plant here. It has a certain grace about it. But beauty isn't only about aesthetics, isn't only about how things look. It's also about some experiences, maybe some feelings of well-being or contentment, maybe just a little bit more spaciousness or ease. So can we bring our awareness to those? And allow ourselves to be nourished or nurtured by them. It's perfectly natural that as humans, there's a bias to notice what's not quite right and to have a certain amount of vigilance or a certain amount of looking around to see what might be causing us harm, what might be dangerous. Of course, it's natural. And we need to do that. But can we not forget that there are also things, whether it's architecture, color, just general shapes, things that are pleasing, beautiful in some kind of way? Can we be sensitive to that too and allow that to support your practice? And then as we become sensitive in all these different ways and more ways, we notice these connections that Nikki spoke about earlier, this connections between our bodily, physical experience and our mental experience. Noticing that when I'm hungry and just remembering that fight I had years ago with that person, then we're more likely to get angry in this moment because we have a certain particular conditions, as opposed to, right, maybe the exact same experience, that neighbor making the loud noise, whereas we might tend to be angry if we're hungry and remembering that fight that we had, or rehashing that difficulty that we had, and the loud noise from the neighbor arises, might be angry, as opposed to if we're doing loving kindness practice, that might be a different experience, a different response. So this points to, just as Nikki was saying, how the body affects the mind and how the mind affects the body. And we all know this. We all know that our perspectives on our experiences can change, right? We all have this saying, I don't know if we all have this saying, there is this saying, why don't you sleep on it and think about it? You know, implying that things will look different tomorrow, not that the issue will have completely resolved tomorrow, but that you'll have a different perspective about it tomorrow. So this recognition that, you know, there's different ways in which we can view things and the way that our present moment experience influences it. In the same way, have you ever noticed that when you're telling a story multiple times to different people, that the story is never exactly the same? Depending on your mood and depending on which perspectives you're currently favoring in terms of your interpretation of the story that happened to you when you were younger, or depending on what you're now emphasizing, if you're using that story to make a point, or depending on the audience who's there. I know I had this experience some years ago when I was teaching in a different context. And you know how often when there's teachers, they introduce some of the little bio. This person has done X, Y, or Z. And it was fascinating for me to think about, like, oh, okay, for this audience, I'm going to write a bio that sounds like this. Whereas opposed for this other audience, I'm going to write a bio that sounds like that. Really different, but you know, I'm the same person. So in the same way, our stories are different, or the versions that we have about ourselves. But then here's the question. Which version of these different versions, which bio, which one is the true one? Which one is the real, actual one? When we ask ourselves that, and when we do this inquiry, we discover that, in fact, there isn't one true, static, real, independent experience. Even though we often think that way and we have this conception of it. Instead, there's no way to look at an experience except through a particular perspective, the perspective we're having at this very moment. And we might have this idea of, like, okay, well, if I just get rid of this perspective, then I'll get to the real, true experience that I had. But of course, it's not possible to get rid of a perspective. We were always looking through a perspective. In the same way that when we're watching or seeing something, you know, with our eyes, there's always a location from which we are viewing something. And then there's the what's being viewed as, you know, out there, and what's the viewing is happening from here. And the same way, right? There's always a kind of like a location. So it's not possible. So there is, let me say this, there is no actual experience that's independent of the way that we view it, of the way that we see it. This is why Nikki and I are talking about noticing our perspectives. Notice how our bodily experience affects the mental experience, and of course how the mental experience affects the bodily experience. But the mental experience affects our experiences because it affects our perspective, the frame of reference that we're using. So if we have an awareness of our patterns or our tendencies of how we tend to react or how the type of expectations that we have, this can be really helpful. Because then if we realize like, oh yeah, it's a habit of mind to kind of like assume the worst is going to happen. Somebody close to me is like this. And they're always saying like, oh my gosh, then this happened. And then this thing is going to happen. And that's going to happen. This is going to have happen. And the sky is going to fall. I'm exaggerating, but it has that kind of like a momentum there. Or, you know, it could be the opposite of like, oh yeah, everything's fine. We don't have to worry about it. We don't have to pay attention. Yeah, everything's going to be fine. Kind of, you know, a little bit dismissive and not really attending to what needs some attention. So if we know that we have some of these reactions or some of these tendencies, maybe I should say some of these patterns or some of these tendencies, then this can really help us to have this little modicum of suspicion in the mind. A little bit of suspicion towards the story that we are making. Oh, the sky is going to fall, or oh, it doesn't matter. If we know that this is our habit, then we can somehow just take away a little bit of the authority of those stories. And yet say, yes, this is exactly what I'm thinking. And I know I usually think this way. And that takes out some of the pressure of the believability of that story. And somehow it helps us to tolerate uncomfortable experiences. Just a little bit more. So maybe instead of having an uncomfortable experience, then immediately having this pattern of reactivity, and then believing that pattern of reactivity, believing the story that that pattern is spinning. Instead, we can have an uncomfortable experience, have our usual reactivity, and then maybe this recognition, oh yeah, I'm afraid, I'm often afraid. When I'm hearing loud sounds from my neighbor, it just makes me uncomfortable. We might have a whole reason why, perfectly legitimate reason why. But if we can just increase our ability to be with that uncomfortableness a little bit longer, then this increases our confidence. And then as our confidence increases, then that undermines the need to have these habitual reactions, have these habitual patterns of responding to the different phenomena that arise. For example, we might see in ourselves this uncomfortable physical sensation. It might be an uncomfortableness in the knee, something in the back. It might just be itchiness or whatever it might be. And there might be this habitual pattern for aversion to arise, this kind of like this craving for the uncomfortable experience to end, and or this craving for a more comfortable experience to begin. either way, this kind of this craving, there's this leaning forward and this really wanting something to happen. But often we don't appreciate or notice how this craving is fueled by thoughts and proliferations about the object that we're craving. That more comfortable bodily posture, or we're craving to get rid of this sensation in the knee, whatever it might be. And so this, the thinking mind kind of like, it's kind of like obsessing and circling around. We get that awareness kind of collapses around the object that we're wanting or not wanting, which kind of like stokes the fire of even more craving. It's kind of like the mental experience. And if we don't notice that as one of our habits of mind, one of the patterns of mind, that can just keep on going because the craving itself is uncomfortable. We don't notice that maybe it's a bodily experience, pressure or tension associated within. And then this way, not noticing that uncomfortableness of the craving and having the craving for the uncomfortables to end, we just get in a loop and dukkha, suffering. So if we can notice some of our these habits of, I'm calling them habits, but habits makes them sound like they're, I don't know, it's patterns, maybe patterns is a better word. It's a little bit more neutral. This word, patterns of reactivity. If we can see that we have these tendencies for mental proliferation when there's difficulty to be happening, a lot of thinking, maybe some obsessive thoughts around the object or around the experience. If we notice these patterns, there might be a way in which we can diminish some of the authority of them by just noticing, oh, this is a pattern. Doesn't mean it's true, doesn't mean it's not true, just means that this is a pattern, and maybe I'll hold this lightly while I kind of wait to see how things shake out here, knowing that it's being influenced by different conditions. Or maybe we can bring some mindfulness to the thoughts that are around the object of craving. Just notice like, oh yeah, I feel like all I can think about is when is that dang bell going to ring? And getting this, like this real stickiness around wanting something different than what's happening. Or maybe we can bring some mindfulness to the felt experience of the craving, the wanting something different, the wanting anything except what's actually happening here in some kind of way, and feel that, for me, I can feel there's a little bit of contraction in the chest area. And I'm often notice that I'm leaning forward in my posture when there's a sense that I'm craving for something. So in this way, talking about sensitivity, bringing like being sensitive, implicit in this idea of being sensitive is what I'm hoping that it points to, is there's implies a certain amount of spaciousness and openness and warmth with the approach. And being sensitive to the way that craving is operating for us, or the bodily experience, mental or the bodily, whichever is accessible. It doesn't have to be one or the other, just whatever feels like the can be help support stability and help support some openness or some more spaciousness. And then if we're able to bring some of this sensitivity to either the experience in the mind around the craving or the felt experience of the craving, if we are able, as best we can, right? This is kind of a spectrum, kind of more sensitive, less sensitive. It's not just binary. If we're able to bring some sensitivity and notice, we might notice that there might be an increase in intensity of the craving and then a decrease. Might be a certain amount of waxing and a certain amount of waning. Often when this first happens, we first notice when there's more wax, when there's an increase of the uncomfortable experience, or then there can be more of a, that just fuels more thoughts and more craving, and off we go. But as we become familiar, like, okay, I'm sensitive to, I'm experiencing this craving, and I'm noticing that it's getting more intense. And if we can just, as best we can, stay open to that, then our confidence grows there also. Our capacity to be with uncomfortable experiences grows. And then we can find more freedom as we gain more familiarity with those experiences. So as we see that our experiences aren't as independent or aren't as static, or there isn't a true, real, actual experience out there, but instead everything's influenced by the way that we, the perspective we have, the frame of reference that we're using, that in fact all our experiences are conditional. Probably many of us know this, but maybe it's not as evident, the conditions that we have around these subtle attitudes that we're bringing, these subtle perspectives that we're bringing. But as we start to see this in more and more areas of our experience, in meditation, outside of meditation, that our experience is influenced by the way that we're viewing it. In a simple way, just as I said, that when we're tired, we're more likely to respond with irritability. If we think mindfulness meditation is only about drilling through delusion, then we're going to feel like we have to have a really sharp tool and there's going to be a lot of effort to get that tool as sharp as possible, and that might bring some tightness to it. But when we really start to see and start to understand that our experiences are influenced by the perspectives, our mental experiences that we're having, but instead are just a product of different conditions coming together, then we don't need to make, we don't feel like we have to say or hold on to any grand conclusions, like, it's like this. It's not like this. Or to make any grand conclusions, I'm like this. I'm an impatient person. Instead of, which is a little bit clunky, but instead of, the conditions have arisen in which I'm experiencing impatience. There's a part of us that might want to do this, that might want to be making these grand conclusions. It's like this, life is like that. This person is always like this. I'm this type of person. You know, kind of like solidify, reify things. Of course, there might be an impulse to do this because in some ways it helps us to navigate the world, make sense of the world, help us feel safe. But it doesn't help us stay safe if we kind of solidify and have those concepts that we're applying to different objects and different experiences and not see them as concepts and not see that they're influenced by the perspective that we're taking. So freedom grows is when you can notice your perspective, notice that you have a perspective, and to have a clear understanding that we always have a perspective and it's always influencing our experiences. And then we can start to see that, okay, our experiences are not as solid, are not as static, not as impervious to change or something as we might imagine. And when we see this, it's just natural that the clinging lessens. We only really cling to things that we think are really solid. They go together. This really big clinging goes with things that are really solid, seemingly solid. So when we lessen the clinging, there's more freedom, more spaciousness. And we can lessen the clinging by noticing the perspective, the way that our experience is being influenced by a number of conditions, including our perspective. And in this way, we can loosen the chains of the stories that bind us. We can see the stories that we have about ourselves. And we can see our journey is a way, in a different way. We can change our perspective and see things differently, including how we are, what we are. What does it mean to have a perspective? And what would it be like to not have one? The freedom of just being with what's arising. To have just what's arising, not even being with, just what's arising. And to feel the freedom in that direction, in that experience. Free of perspectives. So let's sit for a moment. Thank you.